Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips with Paul Harrah's and the poker coach, Joe McGowan. I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please. Brought to you by Poker Stars, Reactor Watches, and the Poker Players Alliance.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
You got to know.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Today's show coming to you from all over the place. I am here in St. Louis. Dennis Phillips is at the Isle of Man at PokerStars World Headquarters. Joe, the poker coach McGowan, will join us later from his home in Southern California. And Vanessa Russo, Lady Maverick, another member of Team PokerStars Pro, is in Las Vegas and will join me later on this half hour as well. Let's begin with Dennis, who's been making a lot of TV appearances lately. Last week, a couple of episodes of Poker After Dark, and on Sunday night, his second appearance on High Stakes Poker. You want to talk about those things first?
No, I'm more than happy to. Let's go for it.
Okay, first, maybe you want to address criticism that some people in some online forums have been targeting at you, which is that you went on High Stakes Poker and you're in there with a bunch of these guys who like to play a lot of hands, and you didn't play a lot of hands. They were calling you way too tight for that show. How do you respond?
Did they see the hands that I did play? I ended up playing a King 7 I ended up playing with a Deuce 3 that I won with. I went 12 hours in there, and never once got up. I had pocket jacks once. I had an ace-king once. Other than that, pocket eights was my third best hand in 12 hours. So I was trying to find hands I could play. It was almost comical. Barry Greenstein was actually looking at me and going, still nothing? Still nothing?
Yeah, Barry made that comment after the hand. Well, let's talk about this hand where you raised it up with King 7 of spades. You made it 3,500 to go, which seemed like a lot with the blinds at 4 and 800.
I can't remember if the straddle was in effect there or not, but a standard raise was at least 3,000 there. And Dura at times would raise at 5,000 preflop. So 3,500 was not abnormal.
Okay, so then Durr, who is your nemesis and is right behind you, he's got position on you all through the game, he raises it to 12,900. Durr refusing to use round numbers at any time. And besides, he's got a monster, the 10 deuce of spades. Phil Ivey calls behind you with a pair of threes, and now it's back around to you, and you decide you want to see the flop. I'm curious why, after Durr raises and Ivey smooth calls, you decide to put the rest of the money in there.
Well, again, a couple of different things. First of all, I had played so few hands, I figured I could probably get a pretty decent credibility for raising and calling re-raise. Second of all, I had decent odds on the pot because I already had 3,500 in there. He made it up to the 12, and then Ivy called the 12. So there's a decent amount there in the pot already for me to throw my other 9,000 in to see a flop, to see three free cards. And again, for a variety of different flops, a King 7 suited is actually a decent hand. I know it can be a risky hand. I know that Joe would shoot me for saying that. But, you know, I actually figured I could get some decent credibility if it came a bad flop or something that way.
Well, the flop turned out to be okay for you. 7 of hearts, 5 of clubs, 4 of clubs. So now you got top pair with a King kicker. You check the flop, and Durr bets 26,200. Phil Ivey mucks, comes back around to you, and you shove all in. Now, what was your thinking here? Did you check that flop, knowing that you'd hit top pair, planning on coming back over the top of Durr, knowing he was going to bet there?
Absolutely. The way he'd been playing the whole time, although Ivey was behind him, and sometimes he did slow down because of that, but you knew he was going to make the bet if nobody else did. And, you know, it was a standard bet by him. Phil went ahead and pulled, which gave me the opportunity then to go ahead and do it, because he would raise their weak. If he did wake up to a hand, if that happened, so be it. When he raised it over 20,000, at that time I think I only had, maybe 65 in front of me, 70,000 in front of me. So, you know, it was just an automatic shove as far as I was concerned.
At that point, Durr threw his hand away. You started pulling in the chips. You showed your hand, and Barry Greenstein joked, boy, you sit, you wait, and eventually you get the King 7.
Yeah, I know, it was so comical. He also looked at me and said, did you ever think you'd win a $150,000 pot with a King 7? But anyhow, you have days like that. I'm not complaining about it. It's just part of poker. But when you never have aces, kings, queens, you never have, you know, a king, queen, and flop at least four to a flush or something that way. You know, these days happen. You have to survive them. You have to be patient. You have to try to minimize your losses. And I was basically inventing hands to play because I played so few. I was going to get some credibility when I did play.
All right, let's talk about another hand you played. This time you were in one of the blinds, and you got into it heads up with Phil Ivey. He raised pre-flop with King of Clubs, Ten of Clubs, comes back around to you. You look down at a pair of eights, and you just smooth call. I'm curious what your thinking was there. Why are you just calling, especially with eights out of position?
Well, again, a pair of eights, that's one of the probably the third best hand I'd received there the whole time. I actually considered coming back over the top of it. But at this time, look at the dynamics of the table. Phil is a huge winner at this stage. I don't have that many chips in front of me. But the only way I'm going to get him off that hand is by shoving. And if I happen to shove and he has, you know, a premium hand, I'm in major trouble.
Yep.
So I figured I could see the flop. I was hoping for another 7-high flop or something is what I was hoping for.
Unfortunately, you didn't get that. The flop comes out King 5-5, giving Ivy kings up, giving you eights up. The action goes check, check, and then the turn is a 3. You then fired out a bet of 12,000, which Ivy called. What are you thinking at this point?
I think on the flop, I actually was wondering if he would make a continuation, because if he makes a continuation, then I have the opportunity to do the same thing I did against Durr and come back over the top. But he checked, which, you know, was different for Phil. He had been normally, if he hit the top pair or something like that, we'll put a bet out there. He even put a bet out there a couple of times when he had a monster hand. So then when the turn comes and it's a total waste card, I actually thought with my eights I had the best hand. I thought I'd try and take it down. I put the bet out there, and he called me, which obviously made me pause for a minute, like, what the heck? He probably either has the monster with the five, and he's smooth calling me trying to exit, or, you know, he has a king, either one of which killed me at the time. So I didn't know for sure what was on it. Obviously, then when the river comes and it's blank, I went ahead and checked it. And Phil did what Phil is so excellent at doing. Phil put a value bet out there. It's enough of a teaser. You think about it. You know you probably should fold. But also, and I hate to admit this, I had played so few hands, I did not want to be bluffed out of a hand at this stage.
Uh-huh.
You know. So I made what was probably a very bad call there and went ahead and called the 20,000 on the river. Phil could do that with pocket sevens. He could do that with a lot of hands. But in this case, he did have the king. He did have me killed. No problem. I still wanted to see it. When you're playing that few hands, you definitely don't want to be bluffed out of one then on top of it.
Was any part of your decision there based on how Phil Ivey looked? Can you even think about getting a read on the guy?
There were some small tells by it, but he's really cleaned up his game in the last 6 months from what he had done before even. So he's very, very difficult to read. and he's obviously one of the best players in the world by far. So, you know, I knew he didn't have a monster. You could tell that. I just wasn't for sure what he did have. I honestly was hoping he had the pocket sixes, the pocket sevens, something like that. He might have even made that raise with pocket deuces. Who knows?
So after you call, there's an $80,000 pot being pushed to Phil Ivey, and obviously it didn't go well for you in the first couple of weeks of high-stakes poker. You got one more episode this Sunday night, and I know Maury Escandani, the executive producer, doesn't want you to give anything away, but are there any big pots or big hands we should watch for this weekend?
There is more of the same, unfortunately. There are a couple of good hands I get involved in. There's one of the last hands we played that is very interesting. And as it turned out, I played it right, which was nice. But if you actually look at the three of them, you look at high stakes, you look at Poker After Dark, and you look at the heads up. Two of the three I ended up coming out ahead. Overall, between the three of them, I was money up. So, you know, for my initial season, my first time go around playing at this level with these guys, I don't think I did too bad.
Would you go back?
In a heartbeat. In
wow.
fact, PokerStars is starting a new one. They are going to be having a five-day-a-week challenge that's going to be similar to the high stakes, minimum buy-in of $100,000. The twist that they have on it is that you can go on PokerStars.net for free and qualify to be the sixth person at the table. And if you're that last man standing, if you win these tournaments on there and do it, PokerStars backs you, and they put the $100,000 down for you. And then, you know, it's your money to either win or lose.
But you only get to keep whatever you win. If you're down like $25,000, you got $75,000 left. You don't get to take that $75,000 home, right?
So think what this does then. We've been playing the whole time. We've got maybe an hour or half an hour left of play. He looks down and he has $92,000 left, which means he'll have played this whole time and leave with nothing. How is his game going to change? Or do the flip flop? Maybe he has $121,000 in front of him. Is he going to be satisfied with that $21,000? Is he going to sit there and suddenly not play? And think what the guy sitting at the table, myself or Daniel or whoever, will play then. If we think this guy's playing super tight, all of a sudden we can start stealing and this and that. If we think he's below the $100,000 and is going to be playing loose and aggressive, we can sit there and trap him. It's going to play and bring a totally different dynamics to the game.
So let me explain how our listeners can get in on this. You can qualify for the PokerStars big game by going to PokerStars.net, download the software, play online anywhere in the U.S. or Canada through June 25th. If you qualify in the first round, and they're going to be doing qualifiers all day, every day, you got to be in the top 200 then of the final round to be able to send PokerStars a casting video. This is the same sort of thing they did for the Million Dollar Challenge. You make a video where you explain why you'd be the perfect contestant to play in the PokerStars big cash game. And if you make it on the program, you'll be called a loose cannon, and you'll get to square off against Dennis and Daniel and Vanessa and Barry and Greg and Chris, and who knows, maybe Joe Hashem will come in from Australia, and Joe Catta will come in from even further away in Michigan, and you'll get to play against these guys. When are they going to record these shows, and when are they going to air, Dennis?
Actually, some of the first taping is going to start in May, as they get the first qualifiers available for it. I don't think the first show airs until the end of June. I'm not for sure the date on that. We can announce that more as we get closer to it. But get online now, because I'm telling you, the first week of May is when we're going to shoot the first show. And it's going to be those first handful of qualifiers. And there'll probably be less competition right now. Get online, see if you can do it, and come join me down at Vegas, sitting at the table.
Okay, now I promised we'd also talk a little bit about Poker After Dark. By the way, before we leave High Stakes Poker completely, that show is having its best ratings in years, up 27% this year compared to last year. I'm not saying you deserve all the credit for that. Maury and his production crew and everybody who's played on that show continue to put on the best poker show on television. So congratulations to them for that. They also produce Poker After Dark, and you were part of a lineup that you were actually called in at the last minute last fall. It was taping just a couple of days after Joe Catta beat Darvin Moon to win the main event of the World Series of Poker. And you were just having dinner at the Golden Nugget, and somebody came up to you, right?
Yeah, Gabe Kaplan came up to me. He was commenting about what had happened, what has now been shown on the air, where Phil Hellmuth got mad, pulled his mic out, threw it down, and stormed off the set. He said that there was an empty seat there, and if I wanted to, you know, didn't have anything else to do, why don't you go play some poker? And I'd dream up on it.
So you sit down with $50,000, and David Viffer Pete had just gotten onto the set himself, replacing Chris Ferguson a little while earlier, and Todd Brunson was there, and Mike Matisau, and Antonio Esfandiari and Brandon Adams, plus you, that made up the table of six. When you walked into the room, did you know the dynamic that was going on with Viffer having felted Hellmuth just a little while earlier?
Not only did I not know the dynamics, I didn't even know who was playing. I walked in there totally blind, sat down there. I had no idea who was playing, no idea what had been going on, no idea who'd been winning, losing, no idea what had happened to Phil, the whole bit. Total blank.
Well, for our listeners who may not have seen it, let me describe what happened. Phil had ace-king and raised it up pre-flop, and Viffer, who was the big blind, was going to throw away his king-nine offsuit, but then decided he was going to play it. Now, for the six hands before this, he and Phil had been verbally jousting a lot. It was obvious that they don't like each other. They had history against each other. Viffer really doesn't like Phil's mouth, and Phil obviously doesn't like Viffer's mouth. So the flop comes out king high, and Phil bets, and Viffer just checks. And then the turn is a nine. And Ali Najad on NBC's broadcast says, uh-oh, Phil bets, Viffer thinks and then raises, and before Viffer even gets his chips in the pot, Phil is all in, shoves his whole stack of, I don't know, 40, 50, 60,000 more, something like that. And Viffer thinks for a couple of seconds and says, I call. They turn over their hands. Phil sees that Viffer's got kings and nines while he's only got kings with an ace kicker. And the fireworks begin. Phil blasts off, goes and sits down in a chair away from the table, starts mumbling about, I can't believe he caught his three outer, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, the river is a blank, and Viffer gets all of Phil's chips. And at that point, Phil announces he's quitting. Leanne Tweeden tries to convince him to stick around, but Phil doesn't want anything to do with that, and so he is gone. Now, I got to ask you, Dennis, are you surprised at the speed at which Phil called Viffer's raise on the turn?
Yes, I am. Phil has not done well in cash games lately. I think he's been a little bit of a mini tilt on it and not playing his best cards there, and he did definitely have a history there. And he was definitely being ribbed at the table. So, you know, he was out to try and make it a point, and he was out to try and take a big pot down. And he was so concerned with taking the big pot down, he didn't actually look at the play, in my opinion.
So now you walk in with all that hanging in the air, and you, once again, were not getting great cards and thus not playing a lot of hands. But here is one hand that you did play against David Peet. Viffer, the blinds are 100 and 200 with an ante of 25, and because it's a cash game, those don't change. That's the way it was all through the night. Viffer has straddled to $400. You raise on the button to 1200 with the ace of hearts and the five of hearts. Peet raises with the jack of clubs and five of diamonds in the straddle position. He makes it 4400 to go. You call on the button. The flop comes out ace of clubs, deuce of clubs, jack of hearts. You've made top pair. He's made middle pair. He checks. You bet 8,500, and he calls. As I always like to ask, what were you thinking?
Well, I mean, he can play anything pre-flop. He's been in the majority of the hands. We were even commenting around the table it was just any two cards for him to play. So I was a little surprised when he called me because he wasn't going to call me to just air there. I might have made some sort of a continuation bet a little bit, but I probably had something. So, but he didn't raise me. I worried for a minute that maybe he was trapping me. I wasn't for sure, because that was not his normal play there. If he re-raised pre-flop and then just checks and then check calls on the flop, that is not his normal play. So I was kind of curious and then wanted to see what was going on.
Okay, so now there's 26,000 in the pot, and the turn card is the 10 of diamonds. He checks, and you check behind. Why?
Well, I had the top pair, but again, I didn't know what he was on. There wasn't really a draw-heavy board or anything on it. I assumed I probably had the best hand. I actually put him on some sort of a middle pair in there that he didn't want to lay down, but thought I might have made the continuation play.
Okay, the river card is the five of clubs, which would complete a flush and also would complete a wheel, ace, deuce, three, four, five. He bets 13,000. Is your first thought, well, he hit his flush?
No, there's no way he had a flush there. The way he'd been playing beforehand, if he had a flush draw, he would have bet on the turn. He would have put pressure back on me. Wheel was a possibility, just knowing him and the kind of cards that he would play in the big blind. But there's no way he had the flush. That was eliminated from my mind almost immediately.
So you call, and he turns over jack five, says two pair. You turn over your ace five and say two pair. And you pull in the 52K pot. As Viffer says, sometimes you're the windshield, sometimes you're the bug.
It was definitely a cooler for him on the river with the five. It was a great card for me on that deal. I never considered folding there. If he had the wheel, I was just going to pay him off. I almost raised him back. That was my consideration. Do I just call or do I raise? Well, I thought about it. Because if he's doing it with air or with just one pair, my raise is not going to accomplish anything. The only way he's going to come back, and he's fully capable of shoving there on a bluff. So there's 50,000 in the pot. Again, we're not playing at the level we do with a high-stakes poker. That's a substantial pot. I was satisfied with it.
All right, well, you're back on High Stakes Poker this Sunday night, and then in April we'll be seeing you a lot on the NBC Heads Up Championships and also on the Windy City Poker Tour in selected cities around the country and the Heartland Poker Tour. And you're going to be coming back here to St. Louis in just a few days to join me in the highly anticipated St. Louis debut of a World Series of Poker circuit event right here at Harrah's St. Louis, our home casino, for the final table on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com. By the way, if you haven't subscribed to this show via iTunes, click the link on Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. Just follow the links for the Final Table radio show. You can listen to the podcast there or get them downloaded automatically via iTunes. Now, before I let you go off to dinner with your pals there in the Isle of Man, say a few words about one of our great sponsors, Reactor Watches.
This is phenomenal. I'm actually over here at the Isle of Man for a meeting with Poker Stars for some things, some interesting things that we're going to be able to announce during Monte Carlo here in a couple of weeks that's coming up there that are great. And I'm sitting at a table with some of the hierarchy of Poker Stars. Isai himself is right here with it. And they all asked to look at my watch. It was phenomenal. Yeah. These are our guys that, you know, extremely successful, extremely whatever. You use a number of adjectives. You can't go wrong doing it. And here they are passing my Reactor watch around among all of them. You know, I'm just admiring it and how great it is. I'm telling you guys, if you've never looked at the Reactor watches, come down and talk to me about it. Go online at the reactorwatch.com. Whatever. It's unbelievable.
All right, Dennis, enjoy the rest of your trip. I'll see you back here in a couple of days for the Harrah's St. Louis World Series of Poker circuit event right in this same poker room that we broadcast the final table from. We'll take a break and come back with Lady Maverick, Vanessa Russo, another Team Poker Stars pro, here on 590 of the Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is the Final Table, the only show in St. Louis with a poker millionaire. That's Dennis Phillips and his co-host Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Before we bring on today's guest, let me tell you a little bit about the circuit event that is starting later this week here at Harrah's St. Louis, our home casino for the Final Table. This is the first ever major poker event. It'll turn St. Louis into the center of the poker world for a couple of weeks. And it starts Friday at 2 o'clock when the single table satellites begin. And that's when you can start registering for all of the events that'll take place over the course of the next couple of weeks. The first tournament will be 7 o'clock on Thursday night. That's a $240 buy-in, no limit hold'em event. And then starting on Friday, April 2nd, there will be three events a day every single day. The noon event each day will always be no limit hold'em, with buy-ins starting at $350 and $550. There will be a seniors no-limit event on Sunday, April 4th, at noon. And then we go back to the no-limit hold'em events for $350 for 3 days, then up to $450 on Thursday, April 8th, then up to $560 as a buy-in on Friday, April 9th. Then there's a $1,090 event on Saturday, April 10th. Sunday, April 11th, will be the $1,590 event, also no limit hold'em. Then Monday, there won't be any regular tournaments, just mega satellites where you can get seats in the main event, which is a 5K championship event. And the winner of that event will get a World Series of Poker circuit event ring. You'll also get entry into the main event this summer at the Rio for the World Series of Poker. And there'll be a whole bunch of cash. Can't tell you how much because it depends on how many people enter the tournament. It's a 3-day finale starting on April 13th. I'll be playing in it. Dennis will be playing in it. Joe, the poker coach McGowan, will play in it. Our friend Bernard Lee will be playing in it. Whole bunch of circuit pros like Doug Carley, who will be on our show next week, he'll be playing in it. If you can't play in any of those, there are also 4 o'clock events each day with other things besides No Limit Hold'em. There's Omaha 8 or better, both limit and pot limit. There's 7 stud 8 or better. There's a limit hold'em event. There's a pot limit Omaha event. There's a six-handed no limit hold'em event. There's a horse event. And there's a ladies no limit event. All of those will be 4 o'clock events each day. And each night at 7 o'clock, they'll have that $240 buy-in for people who are just getting out of work and want to get into a big field and play through the night at Harrah's St. Louis, the World Series of Poker Circuit event. You want more information? You can go to harrisstlouis.com, or if you go to Dennis's website, thechipleader.com, on the same page where we have the podcast of this show, we've got links where you can download a PDF file of this exact schedule that I've been going over with you. We'll be doing our shows next 2 weeks at 10 a.m. Now, those of you who listen live on KFNS, you'll still hear the show at 2 p.m., but we can't do the shows live at that time because the circuit event is going to need this table. So instead, we'll be recording from 10 to 11 or 11:30 or so. As I mentioned, Doug Carley, the circuit pro, will be with us next week, and so will a woman who won't be here in St. Louis but appears regularly in Bobby's room at the Bellagio playing in the biggest high-stakes game in the world, a woman by the name of Jennifer Harmon. She'll be on the show with us next week. Now, speaking of female poker players, here's another one of the best in the world. Lady Maverick Vanessa Russo, who had a great year last year, signing a contract to be a spokesperson for GoDaddy, showing up in the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue. She made the cover of Card Player. She was on Ryan Seacrest's reality show, The Bank of Hollywood. On the felt, she won the EPT High Roller in Monte Carlo last year. She was a runner-up at the 2009 NBC Heads Up Championship, losing in the finals to Huck Seed. And I think happiest of all for her, she married Chad Brown. Here's a woman who's got $2.5 million in tournament winnings, 34 cashes through the years. Vanessa Russo, welcome back to the final table.
Nice to see you, Paul.
Before we talk about poker and a big event you've got coming up, is this true that when Chad got home after being away playing poker overseas for like a month, the first thing you did was take him to In-N-Out Burger?
Yeah, that, you're talking about what I Twittered. It's funny. It was actually, I was celebrating that he was coming home the next day, so I went out and had In-N-Out Burger with my assistant. And so Chad actually wouldn't eat In-N-Out Burger. He's too healthy. But so I was celebrating that he was coming home the next day because I was so excited. And so I went to have In-N-Out Burger. That's the scoop.
I love those In-N-Out Burgers. Unfortunately, we don't have any here in the Midwest, but whenever I'm in Vegas, I make sure to at least stop in there once. And in fact, during the NAPT, I took Dennis over there, introduced him to In-N-Out Burger for the first time. They are among the best in the world.
They're so good. Yep. I mean, you just can't have them too often, or you end up looking like a poker player. So I try to work out and stay healthy most of the time, but every once in a while for a treat, I'll have a burger or, Cold Stone Creamery ice cream or Melting Pot, or I have a whole list of bad foods that are on my treat list.
So when Chad's away, Vanessa gets to eat.
I sneak my treats, yep.
So let's talk about your Big Slick Boot Camp. I know you did one at the Beau Rivage in Biloxi back in January. Now you've got another one coming up for our listeners in New England, and it's time to coincide or just be a few days ahead of the big NAPT event at the Mohegan Sun next week, right?
So I have a couple coming up, but the one that's closest to now is actually a week away. It's next Monday in New Hampshire at the Granite State Poker Room. And it's about an hour's drive, I think, if I'm correct, from where they're hosting the North American Poker Tour over in Connecticut. So if people are planning already on being up at the NAPT for the prelims there, or the satellites, and they want to make the drive on over, it's my most reasonably priced camp. It's only $299, and we'll be teaching poker tournament theory from 6 p.m. to midnight. We're doing it late at night because it's on a Monday, so that way people who work won't have to miss out on work. So we're excited about that. It's my first camp in the Northeast.
And are you the only instructor?
Yeah, I do. I basically wear myself out. I teach the whole camp. I have a lot of teaching experience. While I was in college, I actually worked for the Princeton Review. I used to teach people how to take the standardized test SAT and the law school SAT. And so I have a lot of experience being in a classroom setting and teaching courses. And so, doing it for the day, the only real downside to having me as the only instructor is that my voice gets worn out by the end of the day. But as long as it's just one day a month or so, which is pretty much all I do, then it's no big deal. And I really enjoy the interaction with the students, and they seem to really like it. And for those that know my personality, I'm kind of a hyper goofy kind of girl. And so I keep them plenty entertained, and it'd be good times.
Just this weekend, I was talking to a couple of St. Louis players who were in Biloxi at the Bow and went to your Big Slick boot camp, and they told me they learned a lot of great stuff, which they're hoping to apply during the World Series of Poker Circuit event that starts later this week here in St. Louis. And I was wondering if maybe we could get you to talk to the rest of our listeners with some tips on what they should know, particularly those who may have played in small tournaments here in Harrah's Poker Room. They've got 80 of them in here today, but people who've played in 40, 50, 60, 70, 80-person tournaments will now have a field of three or four times, maybe five times that many, and different structures as well. What would you tell them?
Okay, so I have a couple pieces of advice. First and foremost, absolutely do not, and I mean do not, highlight this in red, put a big circle around it if you're going to write it down, just put a big star on it next to it in your mind. Do not let other people know that this is your first time sitting down in a big event. That is the most valuable piece of information that you can give away to other people, and they will exploit it to kingdom come and make you really regret that you let them know how important this event was to you, because when it comes money time, bubble time, they're really going to punish you. And so do not give people that advantage of information, because it's going to give them an idea about your level of risks that experienced players are willing to take on the bubble. So they're going to make you fold hands like ace-king, pocket tens, and it's going to be a very frustrating experience. So that's my first tip. The second thing that you want to remember when you're going into a big event for the first time is that these events are not, I like to make an analogy, the events you're used to playing are much more like sprints, whereas these bigger events are more like marathons. You can't win the tournament in the first couple hours, certainly not in the first couple hands. Doesn't matter whether or not you double up once or twice in the first couple of hours, that's no guarantee to make a final table. So you got to picture it like you're playing a marathon, and it's got to be slow but steady. You really need a mental endurance in order to go deep in these events. And so just you have to be patient, prepare to be patient. If you mentally enter the tournament in the right mind frame, that's going to go a long way towards giving you the mental endurance you'll need to go all the way to the final table. And then the third thing that I want to, you know, highlight as far as for these bigger events is that the players you'll be playing against are a lot more experienced. And so what you want to do is you want to not play as experimental hands that you're not that comfortable playing. You want to do things like take advantage of position, which will give you an informational advantage against maybe more experienced players. And so you want to be selective about the hands you play, cultivate a tight image so that other players are playing a predictable range of hands against you because they think you're playing tight, and you want to give yourself the advantage of playing most, if not all, the hands you play in position.
That second piece of advice that you talked about being patient and realizing it's a marathon and not a sprint, that comes a lot into play when you talk about how long the rounds are. You know, in some tournaments, you only get 15, 20, maybe 30 minutes. In some of these, you're going to get 40, 45, maybe 50 minutes, right?
Yeah, an hour, if not, if it's a World Series circuit event, sometimes they're in 75 or 90-minute levels. So, yeah, and they go up real slow, usually like 25, 50, 50, 100, 75, 150, 1, 2, 1 and 2, 25. 153, 25, 2 and 4, and they just go up so slow. And so that really, really slows down the pace of play. You don't need to make as many moves as you're used to having to make in the shorter buy-in, quicker events. So it's much more a marathon.
And the first point you made about not having to win it in the first hour or couple of rounds is so important. In virtually every big tournament I've played, there's always been somebody at my table who's been maybe making goofy plays or being really aggressive and building up a big stack. But you know what? Those people don't stick around too long because they flame out pretty quickly, don't they?
Absolutely. And so that's why it's so important to, just to be patient and to stick to your game. Don't go out of your comfort zone. Don't let other people throw you into a loop and try and get experimental all of a sudden in the biggest tournament you've ever played. You want to stick to what you know works.
One of the events, Vanessa, is going to be a ladies' no-limit hold'em event with a $240 buy-in. It's coming up on Sunday, April 11th. What do you think of ladies-only events?
Well, you know, I just won a ladies' event recently at the PCA, and that was a great experience for me personally. I think I finally figured out the ladies' events and how you really need to approach those differently than most events. I don't want to really give away my particular strategy when it comes to those events because it seems to be working for me. But the thing is that a lot of women get up in arms about these ladies' events. Like, they think that women shouldn't, you know, have a different tournament. Like, it's, you know, a competition of intelligence, so why should there be women's and men's events? For me, I understand it. You know, I think a lot of women are intimidated by the fact that it's a male-dominated sport, and that if it's going to facilitate the transition and allow more women to get into the game, I say then the game's better off for it. And so for me, I'm very much a laissez-faire kind of person. If people want those kind of events, then great, they should have them. It's no skin off my back, and the couple that I play a year, you know, it's cool for me. I think it's they're high equity for me, and I enjoy playing them, and they offer different sort of events. But you know, so I'm really a neutral on the matter.
Well, as you can tell, Vanessa's got lots of great advice. If you are going to be in New England on April 5th, next Monday, go to the Big Slick Boot Camp at the Granite State Poker Club. If you want more information on that one or any of her other Big Slick boot camps, you go to BigSlickBootCamp.com. You can find out where Vanessa will be holding them all around North America. I'm all out of time here, but we'll have to catch up with you again this summer when we're all out at the Rio for the World Series of Poker. Thanks for your time today, Vanessa. It's always a pleasure.
All right.
Vanessa Russo, another Team Poker Stars Pro here on the Final Table on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. This portion of the show brought to you by the PPA, the Poker Players Alliance. You know, the extension on the ban on the UIGEA is going to be coming up again in just a couple of months. Barney Frank is fighting it in the House, Bob Menendez fighting it in the Senate, but we need your help as a poker player to support the PPA so they can continue the fight, not just in Congress, but in state houses and courthouses all across the country. The PPA, the Poker Players Alliance, online at thepPA.org. That's thepPA.org. Take $20 out of your stack, four red chips, put it in your pocket, take it to the cashier, cash it in, and then send that $20 to the PPA and become a member today. It only works through members like you, the Poker Players Alliance.
From the poker room of Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is the Final Table with the St. Louis Poker Pro, who beat over 13,000 other players in 2 years at the World Series of Poker main event. That's Dennis Phillips and his co-host Paul Harrah's on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Dennis Phillips is away in the Isle of Man at PokerStars headquarters for some meetings there. He'll be back here in St. Louis later this week to play in the circuit event and for our show next Tuesday. The third member of our team, the poker coach, Joe McGowan, has been very patient. I only have a few minutes for you at the end of the show here, Joe, but I know that of everything we've talked about on the show today, the thing you'll be most excited about is seeing another high-stakes cash game on TV, what PokerStars is calling the big game.
Well, I think it's great. I think this thing that they're putting together is probably going to be the most interesting, you know, highest rated show possibly ever for poker. You know, putting in that, what are they calling it, a loose cannon or something like that, someone that's on that free roll of 100,000. And, you know, Dennis mentioned at the end, when this guy, you know, might have 70,000 but will get nothing, you know, he gets what he gets over 100,000, how that's going to affect the action, that, you know, what he's going to do with the hands. And I think it's actually pot limit pre-flop is what I've heard, so that he can't just push all in. But then after the flop, it's wide open. But it's going to change that dynamic so incredible. I can't wait to see it. And as Dennis said, the other side, what if the guy has, you know, doubles up? He gets a set of eights, someone else's bottom set, and he doubles up to 200,000. And at the end, he starts getting a little frisky and starts bluffing a little bit. I mean, who knows? I mean, I can't wait to see it. I think it's going to be great.
Oh, I'm glad you mentioned the pot limit limitation pre-flop. I'd forgotten about that. Tell me a little bit more about why you think it'll change the strategy having this qualifier in there. Let's say he's short a little bit, only has half of his stack left.
Of course, you know, he's on the free roll, and he does only get, apparently, from what I hear, anything over the 100,000. So, of course, for him to sit there and be a nit and not get that money in action, it's a, you know, no one could ever do that. I mean, he only has so much time. The show will be over. He has X amount of hands left, perhaps, you know, if he's in that spot. Even if he has 20,000 left, you know, that's 20,000 real dollars. You know, certainly if he has 80,000 left, you know, 90 might be a little more exciting, that he might risk and what he might do, and when he gets involved in a pot, other people are going to be calling light, and someone else might, you know, raise the pot, and then after the flop, you know, or anybody, any of those players then could strike and make moves, and, you know, how much the read is on that player. Okay, he's actually weak, but then someone else is in it. Is this a spot for a squeeze? Will he fold? I mean, the whole thing just goes off the hook and completely changes the dynamic of any other poker game that I've ever heard of in history. So I just think it's going to be so much fun and so cool to watch. you know, these great players, and with that one wild card in there. And then if that guy gets a little seasons and gets a little practice and maybe could throw a few reverse tells into these guys, or maybe I could work out a little deal for a coaching thing for who it would be.
Of course, it'll also be interesting if that online qualifier turns out to be one of the people playing 100, 200, no limit on PokerStars against Daniel Negreanu and some other high rollers. We'll have to get into that as a topic some other time. We're all out of time for today. He's Joe, the poker coach McGowan. Dennis Phillips will be back with me next week here at Harrah's St. Louis as we record our show at 10 a.m. I mentioned that for those of you who are going to be here for the circuit event and want to come by and say hi and also see the introduction of our brand new Final Table merchandise. We'll be selling it here at Harrah's, and also tell you on next week's show how you can buy it online. Also on next week's show, one of the best poker players in the world, well known for being a part of the big game in Bobby's Room out at the Bellagio, Jennifer Harmon, plus Doug Carley, a touring circuit pro who has over 100 caches on the World Series of Poker circuit and 17 more at the World Series of Poker itself out in Las Vegas. He'll give you some advice on how to play events just like these. That's all next week on The Final Table. Until then, I'm Paul Harrah's. Thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading the show on thechipleader.com. This is 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.